kids. Forgive that little bit of dead air, but as I always used to say, it's not dead air. It's a chance for you to think. Today's show...
That's the best excuse ever.
Thank you. Well, first I should say hello. I'm Heather. And Desiree.
Hello, everyone.
Today we are talking about morality and atheism. Can you be moral without God? I'm ripping that right off from Dan Barker. We're going to start today's show with Dan Barker. Unfortunately, I couldn't speak with him live today. He couldn't take your calls. He is on tour promoting his new book. And we will be talking about all kinds of things, he and I, for about 27 minutes.
About.
And change.
27
what?
Minutes. No, I just thought that was... You don't say about when it's that precise.
Well, it's not that precise, because there's seconds,
right.
Which I
That's
don't...
That's true. That's true.
About 27 minutes and change. And then Des and I will return to you. This is Heather for Q Transmissions. I'm speaking with Dan Barker, co-president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Hello, Dan.
Hi, Heather.
How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm just doing great. Looking forward to next week.
Can you talk about your book, please?
The new book is called Godless. The subtitle is How an Evangelical Preacher Became One of America's Leading Atheists. And I suppose by America, that means the continent of America. Came out in September, and it tells my story after 19 years of preaching the gospel of how I turned into an outspoken atheist.
And can you tell us that journey?
Well, I'm going to talk about it somewhat during the lecture, but to make it very short, I went through a four-year or maybe five-year process of gradually swinging across the theological spectrum, starting out as an extreme fundamentalist Bible believer, evangelical, and slowly migrating into more of a moderate Christian and then into more of a liberal Christian. And my sermons changed, you can imagine. I used to preach hellfire, and then I started preaching more love and Christian walk. And then finally, at the end of that process, I swung all the way across and realized that I was this brand new baby atheist. And I didn't know any other atheists, and I didn't even know if I'd like any other atheists. But I discovered there's no evidence for a God. There's no coherent definition of a God. There's no agreement among believers about the nature of this God or its moral principles. There's no good replies to the positive arguments against a God, such as the problem of evil. And finally, there's no need for a God. Millions of people live really happy, moral, productive, meaningful lives without such a belief. And so I emerged out. I threw out all the bathwater, and I found out, hey, there's no baby there. We're just natural organisms in a natural environment doing the best we can. And in fact, that was very liberating, and it was much more exciting than any religious experience to finally find my place in the universe as this natural organism.
Now, was there a sense of sorrow at all, losing your faith?
Well, I did not lose my faith. I threw away my faith.
Okay.
I realized that faith, it'd be like asking, did you lose your cancer? I mean, you're glad to be rid of it, right? I realize that faith is not a valid tool of knowledge. Faith might be a temporary, useful placeholder if you don't have any knowledge, but faith is what you use when you don't have knowledge. Faith is not a tool of knowledge, and if faith is true, anything is true. But initially, there was a little bit of sorrow because I liked my Christian life. I enjoyed it. My Christian friends and relatives, and there was nothing wrong with it. There was no bitterness. I had no bad experiences, and I imagined dying as an evangelical minister. But some of the sorrow, which was very short-lived, was that I lost some friends, obviously. But some of those Christians still remain good friends today, so that's nice. And a little bit of the sorrow was the music, the Christian music, which I love so much, which I very quickly replaced with what I call free thought music, so I can still do the same things. The message has changed, but I haven't changed. So if there was any initial sorrow, that has long since passed away.
Okay. Now, again, the meat of the lecture that you will be presenting next week, are atheists immoral? Now, lots of people make the argument that how can an atheist have a sense of morality without a literal God-given set of precepts. How would you argue that?
Yeah, well, there's two arguments. The first is philosophical, and the second is empirical. Philosophically, we can argue that atheists, perhaps, or I'm convinced that atheists actually have a better basis for morality than any absolute religious morality, because surrendering your mind, like a slave to a dictator, to some absolute orthodox principles can be very dangerous. And in fact, we can see through history what kinds of dangers have resulted from this, what I call binary thinking, you know, that there are absolutes where it's right or wrong, hot or cold. Like the Bible says, God said you should be cold or hot, or otherwise I'll spit you out of my mouth. And so philosophically, we can show, and I will show during the talk, how natural, secular, atheists, and humanists can arrive at a very good, more workable, better set of moral principles based on the idea of acting in ways to minimize harm. And harm is a natural thing in the real world. And showing that all ethical choices that we have to make are basically situational. And even most religious people know this. But the second argument is just to show empirically, if it is true that atheists cannot be moral, then why don't we see that? If believers are more moral because of their faith, then let's look at the world and look at their lives and see if they are, in fact, more moral. And they are not. They don't have a corner on morality. And on many different factors, the religious people do worse. The religious believers actually fare as a group worse than atheists. So I will make both of those arguments.
Yeah, because some people like to bring up Stalin, for instance.
Yeah.
As an atheistic leader. I don't know if that's correct, atheistic leader. I don't know if he used that as a guiding principle. He may have.
He was a leader. He was a tyrant, a dictator, mm-hmm. who happened to be an atheist, yeah.
So what if people who throw that out and say, well, he was an atheist and look what he did?
Yeah, well, basically, atheism is not a moral system. Atheism itself doesn't guarantee that if you don't believe in a God, you're necessarily a better person. My argument for morality is to show that we atheists do have access to a natural basis for morality, but not all atheists are going to follow that. Some atheists are just going to be jerks no matter what, just like a lot of Christians are jerks and a lot of Jews. And you're going to have a sort of cross-section or a bell curve of human personalities in all these groups. So there have been and there are some horrible atheists, but if we're going to use that as a way to discredit philosophy such as atheism, the same argument discredits Christianity, because look at Hitler, for example, who was a member of the Roman Catholic Church. He was never excommunicated by the church. He signed a concordat with the Catholic Church. He, in fact, quoted Jesus and referred to Jesus, and he was pro-creation and he was anti-abortion. He was a lousy Christian, obviously, but he was not an atheist. So if Stalin discredits atheism, then Hitler and the Inquisition and all the other horrible escapades of and many other unethical Christians likewise would discredit Christianity. It's not a simple matter of just stacking up the bodies and picking the smaller stack. In fact, we atheists in America and in Canada feel that Stalin is just as culpable, just as guilty of being an immoral person, and that the country that he ruled over really was not an atheistic country. The people in the Soviet Union, for the most part, remained believers, but they officially had to keep their mouth shut. So if you look at countries where atheism is organic as opposed to being forced by a dictator, countries such as Denmark or Sweden or much of Europe, where the atheism is a result of the free choice of people rather than a state force, then you see that those societies actually fare much better on almost every single measure of happiness and well-being than the countries that are highly, highly religious and highly Christian.
Do you have a theory for why that is?
Yeah, I think, and this theory might be wrong, it's one of about six theories, but my theory is that when people are not better off, when they're struggling, they reach out for something else. So the countries that tend to be more highly Christian are, and the United States is an outlier, by the way, is an exception to that. But in general, the countries that tend to be more Christian are the ones that are where the people are struggling more. They have less sense of personal security, and they have higher infant mortality and higher problems with healthcare and so on, and you name it. So I think religion tends to be a kind of last gasp, desperate hope for something more. But when your life is together, when women are treated as equals, when your income and your sense of well-being and your job and your family, when everything tends to be less stressful, you have less need to reach out for this pie-in-the-sky hope that you're going to be special and win this cosmic lottery. So that's just one explanation, and there are many others, but I think this it gives us a general idea how we can explain why certain countries do better than others on religion and morality.
Some make the argument that if you're reaching out for something, at least religion provides you with some hope. Some argue that there are more charities that are religiously founded than there are agnostic, atheistic, or non-religious ones. Yeah. They say that without religion, the world would fall. What do you say to that?
Yeah, well, that's two different questions, but hope is just a word. And in the end of the day, no matter what you hope for, you know, these people who say, without Jesus, I never would have got through this terrible ordeal. Well, what exactly do they mean? Would they have disintegrated into a pile of bubbles or something? Are they saying that they would not have survived somehow? When, in fact, millions of good people do go through horrible times. Like the day our daughter was born, my wife had eclampsia and basically died. It was horrible. And they were both at a high risk, and it was good luck and it was good medical care that got us through that. And we never once thought of invoking some, you know, God in the sky. We invoked some of the best medical care we could get. But in any event, hope is one of these words that really doesn't mean much on the ground, because if you didn't have the hope, you would still keep going, right? But it's not true that atheists are not contributing to charity or building hospitals. There have been hospitals built by atheists and agnostics, but we don't go to the extreme of putting our name on it. Like in Nashville, you see the First Baptist Hospital, or you see St. Mary's Clinic. The religion is taking the credit for doing this work. What people who make that argument are suggesting is that if these people who contribute to religious charities did not have religion, they would stop wanting to help human beings. But human beings are charitable by nature. Look at the American Red Cross. You know, a secular organization. Look at many, many secular groups, University Hospital in London, which are not only founded by but run by people without faith who are just as compassionate and just as charitable without having to scare people with hell or promise heaven to them in order to get them motivated to be good to other people.
Good point. Do you find, do you notice in your own life that there is an increase in organizations that are atheist-based that help out, that are charitable in some way?
Well, yes and no. You know how religious people like to say our charity is religious-based. But atheists don't go into charity thinking this is atheist-based, as if atheism were an alternative or a challenge to religion or another religion. What most atheists and agnostics say is this is just human-based, and we don't care if the people who work with us are believers or not. What we care about is what's happening on the ground. What we care about is, you know, the civil rights or the hunger or whatever cause we're working for. Atheists and agnostics march shoulder to shoulder with the Baptists and the Jews, the Catholics, on many of these issues, but not using it to wave a big banner about how our system of thought is better than yours. You know what I mean? Atheists and agnostics are highly charitable. In fact, as a group, sociological studies show that born-again Christians actually contribute less to charity than non-Christians do. They're giving more to their choir robes and hymn books, you know, but to actual charity, the right side of the religious Christian spectrum are giving less to charity than the liberal Christians or to the non-believers.
Interesting. What do you say to people who argue that if you don't have a religious set of morals, that it's capricious, it's too fluid, like your opinions on an issue could change from one day to the next, therefore the set of morality is essentially useless?
Yeah, well, their argument makes morality meaningless. It is an advantage to have a fluid morality because situations change. it is a disadvantage to have an absolute locked-up morality where your actions cannot change. For example, telling a lie. In general, we value truthfulness, but sometimes telling a lie is the most moral thing you can do. Sometimes by not telling a lie, you are causing more harm. So we all agree with that. Even in the Bible, the prostitute Rahab was praised because she told a lie. And during wartime, in extreme situations, we realize you can't have hard and fast rules. A fluid, relativistic situational ethics is much superior. And it's not an insult to say that we atheists have a fluid situational ethics, because it's a better ethics than a hard rock absolute ethics where you don't have to do any thinking. In fact, if you're just following the rules, look at the horrible crimes that have been done by people who are just following orders. People who fly airplanes into buildings and smile, happy that they're doing it because there's this rock-solid system of morality for them, and so on. So I would take that criticism as a compliment.
How has your personal morality changed since you've become an atheist? And what I mean by that is, do you find it more fluid? Are you more comfortable? Like, were you comfortable with it in the past? I assume when you were a Christian, you were comfortable with your morals, or were you?
Yeah, I was, because I thought the Bible gave us absolutes. And I thought, I was a fundamentalist, so I had one of those binary brains where, if you're talking with a fundamentalist, you have to be careful, because you're not always talking the same way. If you use any type of language that is gray talk, such as tentative, situational, relative, you know what I mean?
Mm.
To them, it translates to black. In their mind, it has to be either or, hot or cold, right or wrong. So, I was comfortable back then, because that's the kind of brain I had back then. I had a binary brain. And I was comfortable because I really did not have to think too much about consequences. All I had to think about was how virtuous I was. Was I following the rules or not, regardless of what happened in the real world? And there's where the danger comes. Harm can be done without even knowing it. You can follow the rules and be this goody-two-shoes Christian and do what you think God wants you to, and result in this harm that's divorced from real morality. So I find today I'm actually contributing more to charity. I'm actually doing more volunteer work for groups than I was before. And I'm doing it for humanity, not because I'm trying to please this deity who, demands to be worshipped and who wants to be pleased with my actions. I'm doing it, even if nobody's pleased with my actions, I'm doing it because, I think most of us fall in that bell curve somewhere where we are naturally compassionate with instincts toward altruism, most of us, if you're mentally healthy. And I'm doing it just for the fact of knowing that what I'm doing is good and right, regardless of whether I go to heaven or escape hell from it.
Are things more difficult for you now?
In one sense, they are more difficult, because you can't just consult a rule book. You have to actually do some hard work in looking at what are the likely consequences of your actions, how do those consequences compare with other actions, how much harm might result from either of those, and which course should I take. So actually, it is harder work to be an ethical person than it was to just simply follow rules. And I think a lot of religion is just plain laziness. People just want somebody to tell them what they should do rather than have to think it through. In one situation, maybe I would take action A, but in another situation, I might take action B. And that takes work, and the big work comes from needing to be as fully informed as you possibly can be about the consequences. Does this pollutant result in more harm to the environment than this pollutant? Should I, dump into this stream or not? You can't just close your eyes and consult a rule book. So, yeah, it's a little harder. But on the other hand, the reward is that even if you fail, that you are at heart an ethical person who is trying to do the right thing and minimize harm in the world.
With the recent works by Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens and people like that, the dialogue seems to have increased with morality, atheism, things like that. Do you think the world is actually changing as a result of these works?
Yeah, I guess I should say there seems to be a correspondence. I don't know which came first.
Hmm.
I don't know if we can say, of course we can say to some extent, there are people who read these books and do change their attitude. So yes, in one sense, I don't know if that's enough to say that the world is changing because of these books. I think these books never would have succeeded in the first place if there had not already been a sort of a change in the world or a hunger for this type of writing. So, you know, is Dawkins' book a cause or a symptom? I think it's both, actually. And I hope that's true with my new book, Godless, that it would be, you know, it's mostly a symptom, but I think it can be a cause for some people that are new to the dialogue, especially at the university level. Students coming out of their home environment, never having thought through these things yet because they're young, and having more at the table, more of a banquet. I remember 5 years ago, I'd go into a bookstore, and if I wanted to find a book on atheism, I had to dig around through the religious books to find one. But now, more and more bookstores have a separate section for atheism. You can go in and find it in the Borders bookstore here in Madison. You can find a shelf of atheism, and there's about 20 books there, which shows that there has been some kind of a shift in society, either along with or maybe partly because of these very books.
Again, you're the co-president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. How old is the organization?
It went national in 1978, so this is 30 years. We had our 31st annual convention. It was a local group for a couple of years before that. So,
can you explain the purpose of the organization, what you do?
Yes, we're a United States group. We focus mainly on the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. We do have members in Canada who like our other purpose, but our first purpose is to keep state and church separate. We do that through education. We do that mainly through lawsuits and through legal complaints. We've taken the lead in our country in challenging violations on the faith-based initiative that George Bush set up, sending billions of dollars to private religious groups that want to proselytize. And you may have heard we went to the Supreme Court last year on that very issue. Our second purpose is, as an educational group, to educate about the views of non-theists, whatever we call ourselves, atheists, agnostics, secular humanists, skeptics. We don't really care what label a person has. We like the word freethinker, the single word freethinker, which is sort of an umbrella term for all of us who are opting out of religion. And so this talk in Edmonton is part of that. We have a national radio show on Air America Radio. Annie Laurie and I are co-hosts of that. It comes on every weekend across the country. You can find the podcast. It's called Free Thought Radio. We publish books. We have a monthly newspaper and so on, other products that we do to educate. Those are the two purposes. Keep state and church separate and then educate about non-theism.
And have you found more interest in recent years?
Yeah, we're growing really fast. Not just our group. 2.5 years ago, we were half the size we are now. We just really doubled quick. And we're noticing that the American Humanists and many other groups are experiencing similar growth, probably because our country is becoming less religious all by itself. People are getting more and more fed up with religious incursions into our government and the politics and so on. So, and part of it, I guess, is because people like to join a group that's successful. We've had a lot of successful lawsuits, and we always have three or four in the courts right now that we're working on. And besides the lawsuits, just a lot of legal complaints. We hired our first full-time attorney this year who's really busy just writing letters with the hope that we don't have to go to court, that we can settle these things outside of the legal system.
Does it usually resolve itself before you get to court?
Yeah, usually one way or the other. Often we'll get a letter of thanks from somebody thanking us for alerting them to the violation, and they'll stop it. A high school principal or a county executive or so on. Far too often, they will stonewall and resist and not want to change, and we see that happening a lot. And, of course, we can't sue on every one of those things. Some of them we complain and we can't get anywhere, and we just have to let it drop. We don't have the resources to take 100 lawsuits a year. But at least if we go to the media with it, we're educating the public. And so we keep trying, and we think our success rate is around 50%, which is really, really very good. 50% is better than nothing.
True. What are a case or two that really stand out in your mind that you've been involved with, whether it's because it was so appalling or so odd?
There's symbolic cases, and then there's the money cases. And in Dayton, Tennessee, which is the home of the Scopes trial, a religious Bible college was sending Bible students into the fifth grade classrooms in the public schools to teach the Bible. And the school teachers were just leaving the classroom for that hour and letting them do it. These were not even certified teachers. They were just Bible students coming in. And the school was just not even, was just looking the other way. And it was all, you're going to hell and Jesus loves you and read the Bible, that kind of stuff, happening in the public schools. So we complained about that, and the school board resisted, and this county board resisted. But in the long run, it was a slam dunk. It was easy to show that what they were doing was unconstitutional. And the very brave family that complained in that town, they had to be anonymous. We had to get a federal protective order so that nobody except the attorneys knew the name of this family. In fact, they didn't even tell the kids in the school that they were the family that was complaining. So, and they were scared. They were really nervous, because if it came out who was actually challenging the Bible, this family would have been chased out of town. They basically were. They basically decided they couldn't live in that town anymore, and they left finally. But anyway, that stands out as very brave people fighting something. And what we were saying is that you religious people can have your classes for yourself. It's a free country. You can set them up, but you can't come into the public schools and use the public resources and endorsement and public time to promote your own private religion.
Wow. What year was that?
The decision came down in 2004.
Mm.
We're complaining about it's a school or a ranch in North Dakota, which has basically taken over the state of North Dakota's juvenile delinquency program. The state's just referring these kids to this Christian camp. And the Native Americans there in North Dakota are prohibited from practicing their own native rituals, like the smudging of the sweetgrass and such. It's called demonic and satanic. And it's the state of North Dakota that's complicit in this thing. And, some of the students have problems. That's why they're in delinquency. But some of the parents are complaining that this is just using the state to promote a narrow brand of Christianity. And that's one of our current complaints and lawsuits that's going on right now.
Well, good luck with that one. Once again, to wrap up the interview, can you give me the title of your book?
The title of the book is Godless. The subtitle is How an Evangelical Preacher Became One of America's Leading Atheists. And it's published by Ulysses Press, September of this year. And
sounds
I think
good.
There will be a supply at the talk.
Right, because you're signing books after the talk.
Yeah, so somebody must have made sure there's a store there, or there's going to be a supply there.
Great. So once again, I've been speaking with Dan Barker, the co-president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. He will be speaking on the U of A campus at the TELUS building, room 150, Wednesday, November 19th at 6 p.m. I, for one, look forward to the talk, and we hope you enjoy Canada.
Oh, I really will. I've never been to Edmonton, so it'll be nice. We're going to drive up from Calgary, so I'm looking forward to seeing something of the town in the month of November.
Great.
Whatever it's like during November up there.
Who can say? And that was my interview recorded on Monday of this week, Year of Our Lord 2008, with Dan Barker. I want a theremin for Christmas.
What is a theremin?
A theremin is an electrical-based instrument which you do not actually touch anything. You just manipulate the air around it. I actually played with one once. It's very freaking difficult.
I had no idea that's what it was.
It looks kind of ridiculous when you're playing. You feel ridiculous. At least I did. But that's a habit. You're basically putting your hand up and down through midair and manipulating sound. You look like a freak. But it's so awesome. And there's... I'll shut up in one sec. And then there's like a documentary on the inventor of the theremin. It's such a good documentary. He was Russian, and then he immigrated to the States, and then the Russians kidnapped him and took him back, and everyone thought he was dead. And then they found him, and he was this sweet old man, and he reunited with his theremin chanteuse, and don't know what it's called, but you can find it at your more reputable and esoteric video rental stores.
Now, aren't you all happy that I asked that question?
Thank you. So that was my interview with Dan Barker, co-president with his wife, Annie Laurie Gaylor, of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. I will be reminding you at the end of the show, which is in 25 minutes, good grief, of the lecture, which is this coming Wednesday. Desiree, do you have some thoughts on that interview?
Oh, first of all, I'll give out the number 492-CJSR, extension 1. That's 492-2577, extension 1. And you can phone us and talk about what you thought of the interview.
Please do. And your thoughts in general, again, whether you agree or not, are atheists immoral? That is the title of Dan's talk next week. You can email us also if you're more comfortable with that, but it's not as cool. But whatever, q@cjsr.com, blah. Desiree. Oh my God, a call.
I think my view on the presentation was I really like the fact that he brought up that atheists, in his opinion, are actually more moral than believers, I guess. Just
I'm
the idea
words.
Of, I know. I was trying to parse my phrase there.
No, not from you, but from him. Well,
you know, the idea of surrendering, like, your mind and your free will to some kind of authority is essentially something that sounds immoral to me, because that...
It is kind of a general statement as well. Go on, though.
No, continue.
Well, I mean, of course not everyone who's religious does that. It's a sweeping generalization, which I'm often a fan of. anyway, continue.
Mm. Well, just, I guess what he didn't bring up, though, that was his reason for saying that atheists were more moral, but he didn't bring up the fact that religious people will sometimes just, you know, they don't misbehave because they're scared of going to hell, and which I find really interesting, because that... in effect says that atheists, you know, we behave and we're nice to other people and we're moral without that threat of divine retribution or, you know, everlasting brimstone.
But we do have threat of jail and
right.
Social what's is that word?
Ostracization.
Thanks. I'm like, ostriches, no. Being ostracized. I mean, I agree that you do not need religion for a moral center. However, I don't know. I find I have some thoughts that are kind of devil's advocate in regards to this. I mean, one can make the argument that there is no such thing as pure altruism.
Oh, I completely agree.
I mean, but why go down the rabbit hole of splitting hairs as well? Mm-hmm. So,
we have a caller?
One guess.
Nathan!
Yeah, like, it, you know, like I would have not called.
Like I said, the day you don't call, we're going to be freaking out.
Dude, you're a part of the show.
Yeah.
Whee!
What do you got?
Actually, there was something early in your interview, Heather, that I just wanted to touch on. You mentioned, like, religious charity as being a benefit. Are you familiar with what recently happened with Gen Con?
No.
Gen Con held a charity auction in honor of Gary Gygax, the creator of Dungeons & Dragons. They raised over $17,000, and their intention was to donate it to Gary Gygax's favorite charity, Christian Children's Fund.
Hmm.
They turned it down. Because... they did not want to be associated with
D&D.
Meanwhile, if this were a secular charity, they would have had no problem. In fact, the money did wind up going to a charity called Fisher House Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, they turned it down and they had the money. They wanted to put it to good use. So they gave it to someone who was worried more about actually helping the people that they're supposed to be helping than the spiritual aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's, you know, just an example of, you know, a morality that prevents good from happening.
Yeah. Like, just, you know, I'm in the Torah, there's something about, you know, I mean, I'm paraphrasing to an obscene degree. If you're following principle to the ends where someone is hurt, just because you're following a principle, you're not actually following the principle. Like, it's more important to actually do good for people than to blindly follow something. Yeah. And that's even in the Torah.
Just even last week, there's another example of morals doing more harm than good in California, Proposition 8.
Very good point.
Timely.
Morals of a religious majority removing a right of a minority.
They would argue, however, that they are making, that they were basing that on a moral choice and a correct moral choice in their worldview.
And this is the ambiguous nature of morality that we're talking about. Like, what does morals even mean?
Well, I happen to have a definition right here.
It even gets to the point of whose morals are you going to be using? I mean,
right.
That's exactly
are we going to talk about, say, the morals of a religion that says stoning a 13-year-old girl to death in a stadium full of 1,000 people because she was raped?
Exactly. And that is moral.
That just happened last week?
Mm-hmm.
About 2 weeks ago, I think.
Mm.
But again, it's, you know, whose morals are we talking about here?
And actually, in that situation, it would have been, they would have considered themselves immoral not to have done that.
Seeing that, if I may interject, that brings up a point. Some make the argument that without a theistically based moral center, morals are too fluid and too contingent upon a changing mind. We'll just make it really quick and say a changing mind. An individual's changing mind, a society's changing mind. However, yeah, you bring up the point of different religions, so that's the same thing. If you presume that a theistically based morality is one that's consistent, well, no, it isn't, because there's different gods, right? So yeah, exactly. Whose do you choose?
And just one more point there is, and then I'll make way for someone else. But just one more point there is, even within one religion, the morals will change over time. I mean, the Mormon Church didn't give their priesthood to blacks until the late 70s, early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And again, their morals fluctuated. So even one religion can't even stay the same throughout time.
Even Catholicism's changed a bit. I mean, they claim, religions often claim that they are absolute and they don't change over time, but I mean, they all do. You can't. You have to change or die. I mean, that's a law of nature. So
absolutely. You could say it's the evolution.
Oh, nice. Hey, Nathan, I had an idea, and you'll have to remind me of it later, but I think you should record a promo for us where you give out the phone number.
Okay.
So how about you do it live right now? If people want to participate just like you do every week and feel that rush of excitement and fulfillment that you feel.
Ooh, nicely done, Heather.
Okay.
What should they do, Nathan?
So I am going to... You know, I've got your number on speed dial now, so...
Oh, my God.
You are the best fanboy ever. Ever.
What was that? 780-427?
What?
Oh.
That's why speed dial is bad.
Hey, this way I never lose your number.
No, I'm fully supportive of use of technology.
Yep. 422.
Okay,
no,
just
no, done.
We no, we're good. We'll record it at a later date, Nathan.
I will get you.
Some poor skeptics like beep, beep,
you,
boop.
You know what? I was gonna look so cool and then epic fail.
No, all good, man.
Okay, bye, Nathan.
Thanks, Nathan.
Thank you.
You guys have a great one.
You
bye.
Too. Okay, the phone number is actually 492-2577, extension 1, 492-CJSR, coincidentally enough, not really, extension 1. You can email us at q@cjsr.com. According to allaboutphilosophy.org, Morality describes the principles that govern our behavior. Very simple. You can find definitions that are lengthier than that, but I think that one's pretty good. We have 15 minutes left. Gosh, I don't even...
Well,
we just got an email from Nate. That's hilarious.
Awesome. Okay.
Someday you can have Q transmissions injected directly into your veins, and Nathan will be first in line for that.
I love it. I wanted to sort of continue on with the conversation that we were having, that morals are dependent. They're also dependent upon situation. And the quiz that you posted.
Yes.
That's something that actually, I don't know who else did the quiz, but...
Phone in.
The thing is, that's something that really made me think, because one of the questions was, let's pretend you're in a war, you're hiding, the enemy is coming to get you, there's a baby in your group, a baby that previously...
Babies should not be on the front lines, I've always said so.
No, it's a t-shirt right there. There's a situation where the baby is crying, the enemies are going to find you if you don't basically smother the baby.
Mm-hmm.
Now, ordinarily, smothering the baby would be a bad thing. That would be considered immoral. But in a situation like that, so let's pretend there's 30 people there.
Right.
So is it immoral to smother the baby, or is it immoral... to not smother the baby and let, 30 people, whatever, be slaughtered. And I find that really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me feel very uncomfortable. The quiz was really interesting. A number of questions about, would you be able to basically throw people under a train, to throw one person under a train to save more people? And I just think that's interesting, the fact that morals are very fluid.
Well, they are, because life is difficult and situations change, yada, yada, yada. And that can be why, the whole cognitive dissonance thing, if someone, whether they're religious or not, sometimes you can just have a set of ethics arrived at by whatever means, based on a novel, whatever, your parents, and it comes someday, it likely will come into conflict with a situation you hadn't thought ahead about, and that was not a real sentence. And what do? You either adapt your beliefs, or you make a moral choice you didn't want to. So, blah. I just wanted to read another quote. This is completely random, but before I mentioned the Torah, in one of my readings I found there's even a quote in the New Testament that supports morality being not necessarily derived at from religion. Romans, is it book 2, chapter 2? Yes, Romans chapter 2, verses 14 through 15. Paul the Apostle, Mudda as I like to call him, "For when Gentiles who do not have the law by nature do the things in the law, these, although not having the law, are a law unto themselves, who show the work of the law written in their hearts, their conscience also bearing witness, and between themselves their thoughts accusing or else excusing them." Interesting, I think. Des? okay, no, never mind.
Interesting. Yes.
Thank you.
I actually wanted to say hallelujah after you were done, but I figured that was inappropriate.
Calm. We did have a discussion in an earlier show. I think, what was the topic, Des? And someone was, we got into a quite impassioned discussion about whether or not you need God for a moral compass. And
I think that was actually during the cognitive dissonance episode.
You're right.
Wasn't really about cognitive dissonance.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was a great episode, yeah.
I wonder if that woman is listening and if she's had any... If she still... I mean, of course she does, probably. But if she had any new thoughts about that based on the interview. I found a very science-y article that I'm very proud of. New York Times, March 2007. I think it's March 2007. Ooh, a caller.
Okay, Heather can answer.
I'm going to continue to talk. Caller, I'm going to just answer the phone, and I'm going to put you right through.
Perfect.
Desiree, go ahead.
Okay. I just want to point out one other thing that actually I won't even, because Heather's going to put this person right on air. My insightful thoughts can be left for
Caller, are you there?
Patience is a virtue, and I'll I'll wait for you to finish your thoughts.
Aw, go ahead, Des.
Well, it doesn't sound all that interesting now. But, actually, one thing I really wanted to point out, and this comes up for me in a number of areas of my life, and Heather just pointing out the fact that she found a science-y article, and she said it to me in a way that she really wanted affirmation, and I say, go, Heather, more science. That's something that I find really interesting. The fact that that our interviewers, they were talking about atheists not being lazy, how people that are religious sometimes do it out of pure laziness just because they don't want to think about what they should or shouldn't be doing, and they want something black and white that they can follow. And that's totally understandable. We all
again,
want
very
structure.
General.
Exactly. And we all want structure at some points. But one thing I find really interesting is the fact that this sense of people talk about teaching their children wonder and awe through religion. And I don't understand why we don't do that with science. I find it fascinating. I find, you know, for God's sakes, if anybody wants to look at the blog, I watch, and I say for God's sakes, because I can.
Future show topic.
Yes.
Transcendent language.
The Discovery Channel commercial, if anybody has seen this, the thing made me cry.
Oh. Caller was beeping in there. Go ahead, caller.
No.
I love that commercial.
Thank you, sir.
And I sing it every time.
I know.
Like, and I, it makes me smile and makes me happy. Even the part where the guy's shooting the gun.
I know. That is the best commercial ever. I honestly teared up the first time I saw that. And I think that's where my sense of awe and wonder come from. But the thing is that it is easier to find awe and wonder in religion because it is so clear and you really don't have to go any further. But when you're talking about science, you actually have to do a little bit of research. You have to have a certain amount of understanding about the world around you and about these concepts in order to really feel that sense of wonder and to know how amazing the world is and how just fascinating and how complex. I love the Discovery Channel. Okay, let's move on, caller.
Okay. I just wanted to say, I was listening to the conversation and I overheard the topic of the stoning.
Mm.
And I think in this particular case, that religion gets sort of a bad rap right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of it is because we live next door to the United States and a lot of our news is quite biased. I'm actually not of any religious faith. I'm, you know, a spiritual person, but I don't follow any religion. But I would say that I've met people of all religions, and, you know, you meet people who are moral and from any religion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I meet people who are Jewish and Muslim and Catholic or Christian, and all of them have very strong moral fibers. And I think when you think about Jesus, just because we're from North America, you know, the Jesus I think of is not one that would be, you know, someone who would hate gays or hate...
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. He's someone... When I hear those stories in this, you know, and like I said, I've never been a religious person, but when I hear stories of a guy who fed all these people, I can't imagine they're all one religion and all this color and all, you know, exactly with his beliefs. So I think in every religion, you're going to be, you're always going to find people who are inherently good, moral people. But at the same time, I mean, religions can get poisoned because people are stupid. So they shift into what they want to believe, and that's what I think happens with, for example, the Muslim religion. I think that happens a lot, and I think it gets generalized. And I think if we look back on the history book to, say, 100 years ago in the southern states, you had quite a huge population of people who thought it was totally acceptable to kill slaves and other people for misdemeanor offenses, and they did it with the holy hand of God at their back.
Right.
And, you know, I think it's very easily forgotten now that, you know, this was 100 years ago in the States. And this was people who were Catholic and Christian and Protestant, and now it's just the emphasis has shifted from that, and now it's, you know, okay, we have this other religion that I think is getting a bad rap. But I think every religion has good people. but...
Of course.
I totally agree. But, you know, there is a certain segment of any religion who will use their religion to justify just horrible atrocities. And
exactly.
That's across the board.
We have another caller. So
anyway,
gonna...
thank you. And everybody, I love that commercial.
Thank you.
It's on our blog. It's posted on our blog somewhere in there. Thank you very much for calling.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Caller number two, go ahead.
Hey, yeah, I really do not think that you need religion in order to have a good set of morals at all. I mean, if you really want a standard set of morals already placed out for you, I'm sure someone could just come up with a list without the idea of God in there. I mean, it's not that hard of a thing to do, but right now everybody has different morals every which way, and that's pretty much why we have... such a wide range of religions and their morals. I mean, like, even Christianity, you can go from, like, Lutheran all the way to, like, Westboro Baptist.
Mm-hmm. And they're not all that different to the outside spectator.
Yeah.
Yeah. But to the people within them, they're definitely different.
Of course.
I think an argument can be made that morality precedes the invention of religion purely based on the fact that the majority of religions are... they have the same precepts. You know, take care of yourself, take care of others. I mean, not to vulgarly boil everything down to one precept yet. I mean, in its purest sense, every religion is essentially that.
Yeah.
So, do one to others.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think people already get that idea, though, religious or not.
Well, we'd like to hope.
Yeah. I mean, like, there are, of course, people who don't, who are... religious and people who don't, who aren't religious. It's really, morals and religion don't really have to be related the way they are right now. And
okay.
To try and justify your morality with religion is just a little stupid.
No, I absolutely agree. And, you know, one of the things I wanted to talk a little bit more about was Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a really good example of this, because in Sweden, they actually, courses in all major denominations are actually mandatory in their classrooms, but they have an extremely low rate of people actually that would consider themselves religious. But then again, they also have a fantastic welfare system. They have great health care.
I love Sweden.
They have, yes, we all love Sweden. But I find that
Abba.
Very interesting, because isn't that almost, that's evidence, in my opinion, that one does not need to believe in a religion in order to be moral.
Yeah.
I love evidence.
Religion actually slows things a little down morality-wise, in my opinion, because I think it was Frank Zappa that pointed this out, that every social advancement we've ever made in society has always been opposed to religion by the start. I mean, like, women's rights.
Absolutely.
Slavery.
And he did say that.
And right now, just, like, gay marriage and stuff. I mean, would Proposition 8 have passed if we would have had the Bible telling everybody that it's wrong?
Interesting. We'll never know, of course, but interesting.
Thank you very much for calling.
No problem.
We probably don't have time for another call, but what the heck? Give it a whirl. I like living on the edge. 492-2577 extension 1. If I may, the reason we are so out of time, really quickly, the reason I wanted to bring this topic up, I mean, one could say, who cares, you know, you're religious or you aren't, you think this or you don't. The reason I think it's an important topic that I think we'll revisit in the future is because a lot of people would never vote. Like, polls are done, and they, amongst the questions that are asked, they ask, would you vote for an atheist candidate? And they say, no. Last on the list, next to maybe a rotting piece of steak, is an atheist. And I find that troublesome. You know, it's prejudiced, if nothing else. And I wonder how many people are actually religious, but they lie about it in order to get public office. Blah, blah, blah. Des, did you have anything really quick to say?
Oh, I was just going to read some stats on Sweden.
Oh, okay.
But we don't have to do that. Actually, what I do want to say very quickly is with all the lovely stuff going on in Sweden, 23% of Swedish citizens responded that they believe there is a god. 53 answered that they believe there is some sort of spirit or life force. And 23% answered that they do not believe there is any sort of spirit, god, or life force. So that's, you know, different studies put the number of atheists in Sweden between 46% and 85%.
Holy doodle.
So, and by all accounts, that is, you know, that's an amazing place to live.
And most importantly, ABBA hails from there. So I just want to remind people that this coming Monday, I didn't get to talk about my science article, but I will link to it on the blog. If you never read any link that we post, read this one. It's a short article, but it's awesome. It talks about the evolutionary basis for morality. I found a science link. Just want to remind people, Edward O. Wilson will be speaking this Monday at the Meyer Horowitz Theater, 10 a.m. Tough break for you working stiffs. How the Hand of Evolution Shapes Every Aspect of Life. That is free. And this coming Wednesday, November 19th at 6 p.m. for a mere $2. And it's just a suggested donation. So if you try to walk through the door, they'll probably still let you. TELUS 150, that's on the U of A campus. I think it's across from a Mac store. It's a pretty shiny building. Dan Barker, Are Atheists Immoral? He's the president of the Freedom from Religion Foundation. We have got to go. Thank you to Des. Thank you for the callers.
Oh, go and check out our blog, people. We're screwing around with it a bit. Please post your comments. Tell us what you think. Good to have you here.